Daf Kuf Mem Zion. Okay, so we've been talking the last few pages So the last few pages, we've been talking about a few different things, but the last of the Mishnah we're talking about is the concept of a Shechiv Mara. So you have a person who's ill, and he is feeling that he may not survive from the illness, so he gives out his property. So like the Mishnah said, if he says, he starts dividing up, it's like a verbal will. And he says, this person should get this, and that person should get that. And he gives everything away. So that makes it clear that he's not expecting to live. Because if a person's expecting to live more, he's not going to give everything away. He might give some things away, but he'd keep something for himself because he's going to live. So if he says, if he gives away mamish everything, then the assumption is that his gift is premised on him self-expecting to die. And therefore, if he miraculously survives and doesn't die, the whole thing is null and void, and he gets back everything that he gave away. If, however, he gives something, he leaves something for himself, so he gives away 90% of his property and his possessions and his assets, but he keeps for himself, why did he keep for himself 10%? It must be that he thinks he's going to live a bit more, whatever. And therefore,
why would he only keep 10% on living?
Well, he might think that he's on the way out. Warren Buffett's already given away a lot of his stuff.
He's got a lot left.
Okay, but percentage-wise, right? Because he probably thinks, gets towards the end of his life, so he's going to give away most of his stuff, and he'll keep a little bit to last him however much longer. As an old guy, he thinks whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the percentage doesn't matter.
Anyway, it's all really based on sort of analyzing what a person
his
has
mindset.
In mind. What does a person have in mind? If a person really thinks he's not getting up from the sickbed and that's the end, then, and he's giving everything away, why keep anything? Yeah. If he says, I want to keep something for myself, that means he's expecting to live further. The logic of the percentage doesn't really matter. Okay, so that was the Mishnah. So now, having gone through a few details of that, we're up to the Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, 3-6, around 10 lines down at the end of the line, it has Omer Rab Zeira.
Yep.
Omer Rab Zeira, Omer Rav. So Rab Zeira says the name of Rav. So the Mishnah told us already the halacha. But where does the actual concept come from? Because we know that normally a kinyan, if you want to give something to somebody, and you just say, I'm giving it to you, and there's no kinyan, and there's no contract, there's no nothing, then it doesn't take effect. There has to be some mechanism for the transaction to happen. But a shchiv merah is different. We say that when a shchiv merah just says it, that's it. It's as if it was written in a contract. So where is it? Why is it so? So Rav says, minayin lemat shchiv merah shehim in haTorah. Where do we see this concept comes from the Torah? So he says it's deraisa, it's a Torah thing, not just a takana that the Chachamim made. Shenemar, v'havartim es nachlos levitoy. It says in the pasuk in Parshas Pinchas that a person who passes away without a son, you should transfer, whatever it translates, v'havartim. You pass over his inheritance to his daughter. There's no son, you give it to the daughter. Yesh lecha havara acheres shehi kizu. So why have havartim? So the Rashbam brings over here a couple of possibilities. He says that it's the extra word of havartim. It could have just said, if a man passed away, ish ki yom suvein ein loy, nachalos elobitoy. So his inheritance goes to his daughter. The whole word of havartim, says the Rashbam, is superfluous. And from that, it must be including something. And that's what it's going to include. And he brings it, some people say it's the word es. It says v'havartem es nachalosoi. It could have said v'havartem nachalosoi, and the extra s is including the shchiv merah. And he doesn't like that, but he brings it as all the s. Who learned all the s's? Yeah.
In the secular law, if you've got a husband and wife owning something, anybody owns something jointly,
yeah,
it means that the surviving partner automatically gets it. So when you actually have to do the paperwork for that, it's called a transmission, not a transfer.
Transmission. Oh, so the fact that that's yeah, okay. So what are you saying? That this is transmission, not transfer?
Well, that's, because in other words, the Holy Rush is a kind of not a thing. It's
automatic.
It's
splitting here. It's really the same thing. Bottom line. Same.
Yeah, but what he's okay. But what he's saying is, but he's saying that the word is extra, and we know that in the Torah, when there's an extra word, we learn something from it. So he says, yesh lecha havar acheres. So there's some other case where you're transferring possession from one person to another. Shehi kazu, which also transfers when it works. Kazu, it's like this, that it works automatically without any fanfare. The Eizai, what is that? Zu mat neshchiv mera. So that's where Rav learns from. Rav Nachman Omer Rabba Baravua, my hacha. He says, it's the next bit. The next sentence says in the Chumash, that im ein loy bas, what if there's no daughter? Unasata was nachlos elechov, so you give his property, his thing to his brothers. Yeah, so from that he says, again, the same concept, that unasatem is superfluous, that yesh lechonestina achever shehikazu. So why does it say the extra word unasatem? To tell you there's another type of giving, another situation where somebody gives, which takes effect. So it seems like they're both doing the same concept. One says, vartem tabita, one says, okay, what's the... Why don't they like each other's pasuk? Why does he choose dafke the one with the daughter? He chooses dafke the one with the brothers. Okay, but at the end of the day, it means the same thing, yeah. So the Gemara says right away, Rav Nachman, who said that we learned from the Unasatim Nachlosel Echov, my time with them Vahavartim. Why does he have to argue dafke for the sake of arguing? Why can't he just agree with the Vahavartim that was Rav mentioned? Why does he have to bring the next pasuk? So he says, because Vahavartim is taken. You're learning from the superfluousness of the word. It's not superfluous, because we already use that word. Ahu mi boile, that word Vahavartim is already learned to teach you something else. Licha de Rebbe, like what Rebbe said, the Tanya we learned in the Braisa, Rebbe Yomer, Bechula Nemra Behen Nesino. In all of that parsha in Pinchas, when it talks about the order of who inherits, it says, Unasatim. You give it to this one. If there isn't any brother, you give it to the uncle. If there isn't any uncle, you give it to the next closest relative. So each time it says in a satin, except for the daughter, it says v'havartim. Why is it so? All of them says the sin of a kan nemra havara. To teach
maybe
you.
Because havartim is automatic, but the satin is not.
Well, they're all automatic. It's all your. It's all your rusha.
Brother and son is a more logical thing that it goes than to the daughter.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want to give women anything because. You know, anyhow, so no, but so the reason is, says Rebbe, because ein lechashem maver nachlam meshev meshevet. The word havara means it's passing from A to B somehow. If I give you something, so I gave it to you, but if I say it's passing from me to you, that implies some kind of a transfer out of the ordinary. Yeah. So he says, what is the transfer that's out of the ordinary? When a daughter inherits, it's actually, in some cases, transferring the properties from one tribe to another. Because if her father belongs to one tribe, and she inherits his property, and then she gets married, and she has her own children, she marries somebody from a different shevet, and her own sons inherit from her, or her husband, if she doesn't have any, then it ends up being a chelik of the other property. Remember that when we learned about the daughters of Tzelofchad, and they were supposed to marry only within their shevet, but that was a one-off. For Benoist Tzelofchad, that is not the rule for the rest of the world.
Yeah, the
everyone's allowed to marry any shevet they want.
The maskana that the thing only went for that doll.
It was only that doll.
And that other ones inheriting have to be with him, but not Tzelofchad actually could marry anybody else.
Right, okay. But that parsha in the end of in the end of Parshas Maaseh, when it talks about the fact that they have to marry within their shevet, it sounds, when you just read it, simple translation, exactly. It sounds like it's setting the rules for all time. Mm. But the Gemara learned before that that's not the case. It was only a one-off situation. That means, in general, a daughter is allowed to, she can marry, a girl can marry any tribe she wants, and therefore it's possible that the whole piece of real estate that's being inherited will end up belonging to a different tribe than it did before. So that's called Havara. It transfers from the tribe of Reuben to the tribe of Shimon.
It's funny, though, that a person, it's okay for a person to marry somebody from a different shevet, but not for the money to go over.
No, it is okay. The money does go over. That's what you're saying.
That's why
it's using the word Havara. Havara means it transfers. Yeah, it's a stronger type of expression that there's a whole transfer going on. What's the transfer? That this piece of land used to be in the area of Shevet Reuben, and now it's in the area of Shevet Shimon. That's a transfer. That's not just giving something to somebody. So he calls it Havara. Ein lechosha maver nachlo mishevet leshevet. There is no situation where an inheritance transfers from one tribe to another. Elabas, only the daughter. Hoyle b'na ubay lo yoshimasa, since her son or her husband will inherit from her. So he says, Rav Nachman, this is what the pasuk is telling you. that that whole rigmarole that we have in the end of Parshas Maaseh is not a halacha for forever. It was only a one-off situation over there, and the halacha is v'havarta, that a daughter can marry someone from a different tribe, and if it ends up going, the property goes there, then so be it. So he says that's why v'havarta is already taken, and so he goes on to the next sentence, the satam. He says that's the one that teaches you of a matnas chiv merah. So that is Rav Nachman, why he learns like that. Rav Zera, my time ale amo unasatem. So why doesn't Rav Zera Taka learn like that? Why does he have to take up the word vahavartem? Why doesn't he also learn it from unasatem? Because he says urcha de krahu. Unasatem is not, it's not superfluous. It's just a normal way of speaking. You give it.
What else could you say?
Yeah, if you say that if a guy, if there's no daughter, you give it to this. If you don't have this, you give it to that. That's just normal way of speaking. Right? If you say, if there's no this, you transfer it to them, that's an out of the ordinary word. But to just say, no this, you give it to that, that's just normal. So you don't learn anything particularly special from that word in the satim, and therefore he only wants the word learn from the word vaha vartim. It doesn't say where did he learn what Rebbe said, that she can transfer a tribe. I suppose Balabatis, you could say that we get both from that. That's, they don't need a pasuk to tell me that. We just understand that that's what's going to happen if she inherits, and it'll go to other tribe. Okay, so that was Rav and Rav Nachman.
It's actually interesting because the initial discussion here is because Moshe Rabbeinu starts the system of distributing.
Yeah.
So that was, but once the person becomes an owner after the goyel and all that, thereafter, in a sense, the thing that, unless there's a fire, the thing goes automatic wherever it belongs.
It's market forces.
Nobody gives anything to anybody.
That's right. After, once the goyel did the division, an
exactly.
Initial divide
unless
up.
You had this fight, unless you had the fight to the side, then you had the bezin making a
yeah,
decision.
Yeah, and now there's, you know, a teres koyanim bones half the line. So that's where it has to end up. Actually, I'm lying, because Yerushalayim wasn't divided up. The Humachlokes of Yerushalayim was part of the whole division to the Shvatim. What they buy is in Yerushalayim.
Which then begs the question, what does it mean, therefore, that it's in Shevet Binyamin or Shevet Yehuda?
Well, it's in the area surrounded by Binyamin and Yehuda, but yeah. The actual city belongs to everybody. So the UN was almost right when they said it was an international city, but it was only international amongst the Shvatim, not amongst the Goyim. That's the mistake they made. They were close. They got hurt.
Zones again, teeth.
Yeah. Okay. So those are the two opinions so far. Then we have next one. Rav Manshia bar Yirmiya Oma Mehocha. He learns from a different pasuk later on in Tanakh, where you have Chizkiyahu the king. What happened with Chizkiyahu the king? Bayomim Haheim. In those days, he got sick. Chala Chizkiyahu. Rav Zaira says that the word of the satim is not superfluous. It's just normal, nothing to learn from it.
So in other words, they're not really putting the stress on the S. It's the
well, that's what he says. The Rashbam brings the pirush of S, and he says the S isn't. It's lo nahira. It's one of his, you know. Okay. Rav Manshia bar Yirmiya brings Bayom Mahem Cholach Chizkiyahu. In those days, in Chizkiyahu's reign, so Chizkiyahu got sick. There's a whole story which we learned in Masechta Megillah. Chizkiyahu got sick. It was a punishment that Yeshayahu came to tell him off because he didn't get married and have any kids. So he said to him, well, you're going to die as a punishment for this oversight that you've done. So in those days, Chizkiyahu got sick, lamus, and it was deathly, it was on his deathbed. He was
terminal.
On the way out. Terminal, that's the word. Vayava yalav Yeshayahu ben Amitz Anavi. Yeshayahu ben Amitz, who happened to be his first cousin, but that's not really relevant to the story, he came to visit him, and he said to him, you're going to die. So, you know, like you do when you go visit somebody in hospital. And he says, Koyamar Hashem, here's a prophecy for you. God says, Tzav Leveischa, command your household, Kimeisata, because you're going to die, Veloiticha, and you're not going to live. So what does he mean, command your household? That means, make a distribution. Yeah, so the guy's lying there dying, and he says, command. All he has to do is command. He doesn't have to write it down. He doesn't have to make any kinyonim. He just says command, and that'll happen. So from that we learn that a chiv merah, when he just says, that's it, that's good enough, that
which
makes it apply.
Interesting, because the Hebrew word for will is tzavah.
Tzavah,
yeah. And yet here it's oral, not verbal. Sorry, it's, yeah.
Yeah, well, oral, in Torah enough. There isn't really such a thing as a will in normal context. Normally it either has to be a gift. Well, it has to be a gift. There's no other way. You can't make a will. in a normal sense to say so-and-so will inherit instead of his kids.
That's right, it's
all matana. So it's matana. Okay. So that was where he learns it from the fact that he told Chizkiyahu it's a command. Funny thing is, of course, the Chizkiyahu ended up living another 15 years after that, because he that was when Yeshayahu said he's going to die, and he says to me, who says? Who are you playing God? I'll daven. That even if you got the sword on your neck, you should still daven. So he turned to the wall. By Yisuf Chizkiyahu Ponav Alakir. So Chizkiyahu turned to the wall, which is where we learn that when you daven, you're supposed to face the wall if you can. And he davened, and he lived another 15 years after that.
Did he get married?
He did get married. The whole point was Chizkiyahu had a nevuah that he was going to have a son who wasn't going to be very good. His name was Menashe. And he decided, Besser Nisht, what do I have to have a son and he's going to be like that? I'd better not have a son. And Chizkiyahu told him, it's not your business. Your business is to do the mitzvah pruervu. And if it turns out that way, that's God's business. You do what you have to do. So Chizkiyahu says to him, yeah, you think it's such a great idea? Give me your daughter. We'll see. Maybe between you and me, we'll end up changing the thing and we'll get a decent kid out of it. So he took it, did. He agreed. Didn't help though. They still got Menashe. But Menashe turned out terrible. He was one of the most terrible kings. He put Tzelem in the Hechel, the Chulu. He did Shuv at the end, but by then it was already.
Which is very interesting. Knowing what Chizkiyahu Melech knew, you can imagine what sort of chinuch he gave.
What school did he send him to? I want to know what school he sent him to after all that.
And despite all that,
it didn't help. It didn't help.
Not all their Torah.
Not all their Torah. I don't know. Oh. Anyway, it didn't work out. Rami Bar Yeches.
Didn't work out. That was the
Kavan.
You really said
that. Okay, right. Rami Bar Yeches Kolam Rami Hacha. So he learns from Chizkiyahu where he tells him Tzav. And Rami Bar Yecheskel, this is Rabbi Yehuda's brother, by the way. There were two brothers, the sons of Yecheskel, Rabbi Yehuda and Rami. Rami was the Israeli. Like, all Israelis are Rami, you know. Rami, the son of Yecheskel, says, V'achisoyfel ro'o, Achisoyfel was one of the advisors of David HaMelech, who turned traitors, sort of, so to speak, and he supported Avshalom in his rebellion against David. And he was meant to be the chief tactician, and he gave Avshalom the tactics, and Avshalom didn't listen to him. So he couldn't live with himself after that, and he committed suicide, actually, because his Eitzah wasn't accepted. So it says, Achisoyful ra ki loy nasasar tzosoy. Achisoyful saw that his advice was not followed, so he said, that's it, I'm out of here. V'yachvesh is a chamoyer. So he saddled up his donkey, Vayelech al Beisa el Ira, he went home to his city, Vayetzav el Beisa, he commanded his household, Vayechorek, and he strangled himself. He hung himself, whatever he did, I don't know, he killed himself. So how did he do his will, so to speak? But Tzavah b'Yalma. There also it says, Vayetzav, so it was just a Tzavah. He didn't have to write anything, he didn't have to do anything. So that's where he learned it from. Okay, so now we know that Shechiv Merah is min haTorah. Now that we mentioned Achisoyful, let's just mention some other things about him. Tana Rabbana, Shleisha Dvarim Tziv Achisoyful as Bono. There were three commandments that Achisoyful gave to his sons while he was on the way out. Number one, Atziv Machloikis, don't argue amongst yourselves, be nice to each other. Number two, Altimradu Machlos Beis David, don't rebel against the kingship of David HaMelech. Why? Why does he say that? Because he says, I did, and look what happened to me. So don't start up with Ora Melech, just go with the flow. And Yantiv Shalat Seres Boror, if on Shavuot's day it is a clear sky, Ziru Chitim. That's a sign that this year is good for wheat, plant wheat. Three very different types of advice he gave them. Okay. Marzutra Amar Balul Itmar, not Barur, which means clear skies, but Balul, which means like partly cloudy, mixtures of sun and cloud. Amina Hardoy, Mishmedin of Yankiv, Loi Barur Barur Mamish, according to the one who says it was clear, it doesn't mean Mamish clear, but Loi Balul Balul Mamish, and it doesn't mean, the one who says it's cloudy, it doesn't mean Mamish cloudy. Elo Afilu Balul, even if it's cloudy and a ruach tzfeinis b'nav shosoy and a northerly wind is blowing and scattering the clouds, zehu boro, that's then called clear. And that's going to be a good year for planting wheat. Amal Rab Abba, Rab Ashi, Anan, Ad Rab Yitzchak Barabdim, Maslin Allah. We learned this whole thing regarding the statement of Rab Yitzchak Barabdimi. What on earth did he say? The Amal Rab Yitzchak Barabdimi, Motzi Yontif Achron Shachai, not to do with Shavuos, but to do with the last Yontif of Sukkot, which we call Simchas Torah, but in those days was Shmini Atzeres, I think. So the Motzi Yontif, the day after Shmini Atzeres, Hakol Tzoyfil Nashana Marocha. This is where you can judge what the weather patterns for the year are going to be. So everybody looks to see the smoke coming out of the off the Mizbeach to see which way the wind blows. This is where the expression comes from.
Yeah.
They wanted to see which way the wind blows. Not to clap it soften. If the wind blew towards the north, Anim Smechim, the poor people are happy. The Balabatim are upset. Why? Because it's going to be a plentiful rainfall. Yeah, so there's going to be plenty of grain, of produce. But Peiris Markivim, but also the land will be very mushy and the fruit won't last long. Or the grain won't last long and it'll have to be used up. So therefore, what's going to happen? There's going to be oversupply in the market. What happens when there's oversupply? Prices go down. So the poor people are happy because it's going to be a cheap year. And the business people are upset because it's going to be low prices. Not a klape dorim. If the wind blows towards the south, it's exactly the opposite. Aniyim marat sevim and balabatim asmechim. The poor people get upset. The balabatim are happy. Mipnei shagishmei shanam uwatin. That means it's going to be a little rain, and the peiris mishtamim, and also the ground won't be so wet and mushy, and you'll be able to store it up, and therefore there'll be low supply, and low supply pushes the price up. So the businessmen are happy, and the poor people are unhappy. Not a klape mizrach, if it blows to the east, hakos meichem, everybody's happy. Because it's going to be just average. So everybody gets a go. Klape mariv, hakos, if it goes to the west, everybody's upset. Because you're going to have a drought. Nobody wants a complete drought, because then you starve. So that's no good. Okay, so that is what Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi said. That's how you can tell what the grain's going to do this year. No, not on Yom Tov.
No,
Motzei Yom Tov, you watch the smoke and you say, okay, this year it's going to be like
that's,
this.
That's what they're talking about. Terrace, but it says on.
No, he doesn't mean planted today. He means if you see that this day is clear, so
is
tomorrow you start planting, whatever. Yeah. Now the Gemara asks the Ramini, just a second. You just said when the sun, sorry, Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi said, when the wind blows to the east, then everybody's happy, and to the west, everybody's upset. Or Ramini, I'll ask you a contradiction. This Brisa says, Mizrach is Le'olam Yofa, the easterly wind is good. That means the easterly wind blows towards west. When you say Klapem, so Klapem Mizrach means towards the east, which is a wind that comes from the west. So the Brisa said, the Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi said, if it goes from west to east, that's good. And here it says that the east to west is good, but Rabbi Slalom Kosher, but west to east is bad. Kosher, it's always bad for you, but bad for everybody. Yeah, why is it? And so that's the east and west. Ruach Tzfoni is the northerly one, is Yofa Lechiti B'Shar Sheviyu Shlish. It's good for wheat if it's already a third ripe. But Kosher L'Zeisim B'Shar Sheyanitzu, it's bad for the olives if they're just budding, sprouting. And Ruach Droim is a southerly wind, is Kosher Lechiti B'Shar Sheviyu Shlish. It's bad for the wheat if it's so it's the opposite of north, so it's bad if it's a third ripened wheat. And kosher lezeisim b'shasha, sorry, v'yofa lezeisim, it's good for the olives b'shasha nitzu. So it's exactly the opposite of the north. So he said, v'omar ab yisif v'temer amar zutra v'temer amnachim b'yitzach. You want to remember the bit about the wheat and the olives, which one's which, simoncha, so it's north is north and south, yeah, one's good for olives and one's good for wheat. So how are you going to remember which one? The simon is easy. Shulchan, in the Beis HaMikdash, the Shulchan was Betzofen. The Shulchan, which they put the Lechem HaPanim on, was in the north, because it says, Al Tzela HaMishkan Safoina. Yeah, something like that. The Pasuk that tells you where to put the Shulchan. Over Menorah, Bedarnim. The Menorah was opposite. Neichach HaShulchan was the Menorah in the south. So for each one, Mar B'Didei. So the northern wind looks after the wheat, because he's got the shulchan, he wants good wheat for the lechem upon him. And the southern one looks after the olives, because he's got the menorah, he wants good oil for the menorah. So that's an easy way to remember which one's which. But I'll call upon him, it's a kashan of Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, who had a different interpretation of north and south. So he says, loy kasha, east and west. He said that west is good and east is bad, and this one says that east is good and west is bad. How does he get out of that one? He said, look, Kasha, halon v'halohu, it depends which country you're in. If you're in Bavel, it's in Eretz Yisrael. in Bovel, because Bovel is a the land in Bovel, they call the Fertile Crescent, right? It's all full of, it's moist, and there's lots of liquids and water and whatever. So it doesn't really need rain. Yeah. So therefore, if you get too much rain, it's very bad for it, because you're going to get floods and everything's going to get ruined. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's the opposite. Because Eretz Yisrael is a dry area, it's not very moist, then it needs rain. There's no rain in Eretz Yisrael, as we know. Everybody panics. So it doesn't have natural moisture in the ground, and therefore it needs more rain. So therefore it depends where you are. If you need more rain, you want more rain. If you don't need it, then it's bad to have too much. Okay, that's the agricultural part. No, we're not finished the agricultural part. Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Abishal Leimer, Yantav Shalatzeres, Boror, if you have the day of Shruas and it's a clear sky, is Simon Yofel Echolachon Akula. It's a good sign for the whole year. It doesn't say exactly what the good sign is, but it's just going to be a great year. Right?
I dare not ask you a question. That,
what was it like on Shruas this year?
If the land is dry, which it is, why Hashem gave us this land? Why did he make it that condition? Why didn't he make the condition a bit more warm?
Maybe he wanted people to daven for rain.
That's right.
And that way it would be totally, completely in your... Your efforts, your work.
That's one of the tainas that Shimon Shotach had against Choni Amangel. You're doing all these things without making it.
So God doesn't just give you stuff, as we can see. Yeah, so you have to live through life and try to get it with your own efforts. Okay, Omer Abzvid, Hayyem Akam de Reishat, the first day of Reish Hashanah, Ichamim. If it's a hot day, kula shata chamima, the whole year is going to be hot. And I karir, kula shata karira. If it's cold, the whole year will be cold. So he says, l'may nafkimina, who cares? What are we, meteorologists? We're going to start doing the weather forecast. So he says, nafkimina is l'tfilos shel kohen gadol. The kohen gadol, the little tefillah that he does when he comes out of the Kiddush HaKadoshim, if anyone pays attention after Chaim Tzvi's finished with his kohenims, over there, it says that his tefillah is that if it's going to be a dry year, it should be wet, and like he prays that it should be the way it needs to be. So if he knows already from Rosh Hashanah what it's destined, what it's been signed on Rosh Hashanah, then he knows what to pray for. According to what he sees on Rosh Hashanah, he can already daven on Yom Kippur. Okay, we always say Shabbos Breishis. That's how the year goes. So he says the first day of Rosh Hashanah should look at the weather on Shabbos Breishis.
Maybe Shabbos Breishis, maybe Zeruchni is the thing. This is all the Gashmis.
Oh, okay. I'll accept that answer.
Wouldn't help to look at the weather here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe it'll affect the weather when it's dry.
He said there's a difference between Bavel and yeah. Israel itself, and Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. Was in Bavel, you also look for
yeah, every country is different. You still have a simonim. Okay, Verava Amrav Nachman. Okay, so all that started because we talked about the Matan Shchivah Rabin Deraisa, and we one guy learned from Achis Soifel, and so we got sidetracked with Achis Soifel and the weather patterns and everything else. Now let's go back to that discussion about the Matan Shchivah. So we had Rav Nachman in the name of Rabbi Baravua, who said that we learned it from HaTorah from an Asatim. But Rava Amar Rav Nachman, Rava says, no, that's not what Rav Nachman said. Rava said, the whole thing is only midrabanon. There is no pasuk that you learn it from. The whole thing is midrabanon. Why did the Chachamim make a takana that a matnas chimura doesn't need a contract, doesn't need a kinyan? Shemati tariv daiti olav. Maybe his mind will go crazy. The Rashbam brings two pirushim over here. Pirush number one is that maybe if you're going to go and call witnesses and call a sefer to write it and call this and set up a whole committee meeting to organize it, meanwhile the guy's going to lose his mind. He's on the way out, and therefore it's not fair that he shouldn't be able to just do it while he's got it and while he's still lucid. Let him do his stuff and don't make delays because he might not be lucid anymore. And he says that I don't accept that pshat because that's not a reason to get the kana. So bad luck. You should have done it earlier. Like, why should I change the halacha and say that you don't need a kinyan just because if the guy's not lucid anymore, so he's not. So bad luck. So it's bottle. So then he says the second pshat he brings is that it'll cause mental anguish. It'll be tsar for the guy who's dying, because if he thinks that people aren't going to listen to him, so you have to say, don't worry, as soon as you said it, we're going to do what you said. So to make the guy relax, that's what the takana is for. And that's worth changing the halacha for, to make the guy relax. So that's what he says at pshat. It's not that we're worried that he's going to be late and you're not going to end up with a lucid tzava. It's more if it's for the guy himself that he should be able to relax. So that's Shema Titorif Da'at Yalov. So he says it's Drabonon. Fred the Gemara Miyom Rav Nachman Hachi, does Rav Nachman say it's Drabonon? Take the Omer Rav Nachman said, Afagaf Domer Shmuel, even though Shmuel says, Hamech Eshtachev Lechaveri. Someone sells a contract to his friend. What does that mean? I have a contract that says that Reuven owes me money. I take that contract and I sell it to you. Yeah, and now you can go and collect. It's like when you sell it to a place down at Bradstreet or one of these guys. Yeah, you take the debt collecting agency. So you're the debt collecting agency. You pay me a smaller amount of money, less than the face value. And now you have the right to go and collect from that shtar. Yeah. And what happens if I then meet up with the lawyer and I say, you know that money that you owe me? Ah, forget it, I'm moichel. Yeah? Meanwhile, you've got the shtar. It's bad luck for you. I'm moichel, you lose out. Moichel, I feel a yoivish moichel. Even if the original malva dies, his son, who inherits from him, can also say, yeah, don't worry about it, I'm moichel. Well, obviously, you'll have to give the money back to the debt collector. It doesn't mean that it can rip you off, right? That means you can't go to the Reuven and say you owe me money. Reuven will say, one second, the guy I borrowed money from was moichel. What do you want from me? You'll come back to me and say, hang on, I bought the stuff from you and he went and Michael it, so I'll have to pay you back. That's what we call a din of garmi, if you remember the whole concept in damages about a cause. There was different types of cause, even though we say groma ben izokin is potter, but there's the whole encyclopedia Talmudica that we looked up once, of groma and garmi. There's two different types of cause. Yeah, there's a groma, which is garmi is a much more direct. That means you did an action directly, and that action caused a loss. So if I moichel a shtar that you're going to collect from, my action directly causes that you're going to lose the money, even though I didn't take the money out of your pocket, but it's a direct cause. Whereas a groma is more like, I don't know, I lit a fire over here and your contract ended up somehow in the fire. You know, so it was my fire, but I didn't really cause it directly. It was way out of the picture. That's a groma. I'll call upon him. He says, Yevishkin moichel. So what do we see from that? Even though Shmuel says that. So what do we see from that? So he's Michael. Right, so Shmuel is Moida though. So this is all of Nachman's statement, I'm sorry. So Rav Nachman, so Shmuel said, even though that concept exists, but Moida Shmuel, Shmuel agrees that if he gave it, he didn't sell it to Dun & Bradstreet. He gave it to his friend as a part of his will, so to speak, as a matna shchivmera. Then that's it. He can't be moichel anymore. Yeah, because giving it to him is a strong. There's no real reason. It's just we strengthen the power of the gift that he gave as a shchivmera, so that the recipient now can go to Reuven and say, "Hey, you owe me that money." And he says, "Oh, but the malva was moichel. Bad luck." When he was moichel, he was already on his deathbed. It doesn't count. So therefore, what are we saying? If he holds us the rabbanon, yeah, if he holds that shchiv meraz the raisa, so it's such a strong thing that it can counterbalance the mechila of the malva. But if it's only a rabbanon, how can the rabbanon make something that should be so strong that counterbalances the mechila, which is min haTorah? If you tell me that the concept of a shchiv mera not requiring a kinyan or a contract is min haTorah mishum hachi and a yachal imcha. So when a person gives something as a matna shchiv mera, it's so powerful that he can't even be moichel the loan that was in the original shtar. But if you say the whole concept of shchiv mera is only mid rabbanon, amai ena yachal imcha. Why can't he be moichel? The concept of him being moichel is min haTorah. The concept of a shchiv mera is the rabbanon. So how can you make the rabbanon thing stronger than the min haTorah thing? Answers Rav Nachman, ein shel Torah v'asua kishel Torah, because that's the way the rabbis made it. The whole concept is mid rabbanon, but when the rabbanon made the concept, they made it so powerful that it has the powers of a deraisa, and therefore, in that case, when there's a matna shchiv mera, that it overpowers the concept that a guy that the malva can be moichel when he gave on the shtar to somebody else.
What about his son?
The
Yeah, what about him?
He said that in a normal case, even the Yerush
can Michael. Well, he for sure wouldn't be able to Michael, because it's, he's not even being Yerush. It's going to the Shimra. Huh? Okay. Omar Rava Omar of Nachman. Rava says an Emra. Nachman Shimra Rasha Omar Yadu Plaini Babayze. Now, what sort of a thing can a Shimra give over? If he says a command on his long on his deathbed, and he says, I own a property over there, a flat, so and so should go and live in that flat after he's gone. Yoichal Plaini Peres Dakalze. I have a date tree still in Shepratun. Yeah? You, that so and so will go and he'll get the fruits of that date tree in Shepratun. Lo Omar Klum. That doesn't work. That is not a valid Matnas Chivmera. Why? Because he's not giving an object. Yeah? A promise that somebody can live in my house is not an object. Yeah? It's something else. It's just a right to something. Yeah? Acha Yoimar, it doesn't work unless he says, Tanu Bayezela Ploini, I am giving that house to so and so, the Yodabai, and he can live there. In other words, even though he means the same thing, he means I'm not giving him the actual title. I'm giving him the right to live there, but I'm makne to him, so to speak, the house. What? Le Peiris. Like you can be makne something to somebody, Le Peiris. Kenyan Paris is called, and that works to Matnas Chivmera. But if you're not makne anything, no object, it doesn't work. So he says, if give him the house to live in, to new decals of the plenty of Yechel Peres, give him the tree to eat the fruit of, then that works, and he has the rights to the fruit, and he has the rights to live in the house, but he still doesn't own the asset. He can't sell it. Okay, so how does that work? Why can't he just say he should live in it as a command without being makna the actual object? Remember, does that mean to say the Savar of Nachman Milsa the Issa Bebori Issa Beshkimara? Why? Because a person generally can't make a kinyan on something fluffy. A kinyan has to be chal on an object. You can't make a kinyan on a promise, you know, that you can live in the house. That's not a, you're not cutting anything there. Yeah? So something which works for a healthy person, if he would do it with a kinyan, works for a shchivmira without a kinyan. But the lesser bebori, something which you cannot do with a kinyan even, with a healthy person, lesser b'shchivmira. So the only difference between a shchivmira and a healthy person is he doesn't have to make the actual kinyan. But in terms of what you can give, it's the same. Whatever you can give with a kinyan for a healthy person, you can give without a kinyan for a shchivmira. Is that the pshat? V'yomer Rav Amar Rav Nachman. But Rav said the name of Nachman, top of the page. Shchivmira shomer tzru avosi l'ploini. If he says, give the loan, back to the case where the guy owed him money, he says, give the loan, he doesn't give a shtar over, the shtar is an object. There's no shtar, it's a milval peh. Yeah? Shmerel owes me money, and I say to Shmerel, give the money to you. Yeah? No kinyan, no nothing. So if it's a shchivmera, then it works. Hava asel aplani. The afik, after less of bori, if a healthy person does it, it doesn't work. Yeah? I can't be makne alone without giving you the shtar or without giving you some kinyan. So therefore, how come it works over here? So we say, how come this works? Havasal aplani is Rapapa Amar Hova Yevish Yarsha. A loan is different because since the guy's on his deathbed, if you have a milval peh, yeah, and the malva dies, so his son inherits and he collects the milva, even though there's no kin, there's no object. So in some sense, you can inherit something that's not an object. So by Matna Shchivmera, he could give something that's not an object too. Yeah. The general rule is it has to be something that's kinyanable, but this is an exception, just like we see by inheritance. It's an exception that he inherits the right to collect the money. He's not inheriting something with any substance to it.
The right to leave is linked to the underlying premises.
It can be linked to it, but he doesn't have to. He doesn't. He can say.
That's why he's saying there's a difference between the living.
Yeah, the right to living. Well, you couldn't inherit that either. Yeah, if a person has a right to live. Let's say there's a deal that Reuven allows Shimon to live in his house rent free, and then Shimon died. So Ohad comes along and says, "Well, I want to live there for free also." And Reuven says, "Get lost! Get lost! You don't inherit the right to that. I let your father live there for free." Yeah, so that wouldn't work. Yeah, exactly. Rav Acha b'Rei d'Ravika Amar. The reason why Halva is different is while Halva isa b'bori. What did you say? Your whole kasha was based on the fact that you can't transfer the money that someone owes you as a loan in a milval peh. You can't transfer it between healthy people. There's no kinyan. There is. There is a concept, not just automatically, but there is a way to do it. If Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me $100. Oh, so Shimon, yeah. And he says, Snail the plaintiff, give it to Levi. Instead of paying me back, give it to Levi. But Mamet Shloshtan and Levi's also here. They're all three sitting around. Connor, that works. In other words, there is a mechanism to transfer a milval peh to a third party without making a kinyan, even by a bori. So since he can do it that way, then by a shchiv merah, we say, even if it's not mamet shloshtan, it works. Even just bechal, by saying you give it over, it works.
If a bori wants to give somebody a right to live in his property,
yeah.
For that person to live for the rest of his life in his property, does he has to make an actual kinyan on
the key? He has to make a kinyan, and the kinyan has to involve an object. So he can say, I'm makna the house, le dirose, whatever, to the rights to live there. That's right. Okay, shkoyach.